from Northern California. It's the Penpals.buzz Prison Pen Pal Podcast. Hear real stories from real inmates who want to write to you. Now, here's your host, Big Steve.
So I think one of the things people love about the Prison Pen Pal Podcast is also one of the things a lot of people find so bizarre and so weird. Because what we're doing here is we're basically giving you an individual who's committed a crime, who's locked up in prison, sometimes even for life, sometimes even someone on death row. And we're telling you, here's this person, write them, get to know them, become their friend. And some people think, yeah, that's really cool. Others are like, what the hell is this guy smoking? Is this guy on crack? Why would I want to do that? But both sides want to listen more. They want to learn more. They want to hear the stories. And eventually, some of the people who might think I'm smoking something, which I'm not, by the way, they might ultimately cross over and decide, yeah, let me give this a try. This is interesting. This isn't something that we do on Facebook. This isn't something that we're doing in our normal day-to-day life when we go to the grocery store and cook dinner and hang out with the husband and the kids. No, this is next-level stuff here. This is maybe bizarre. I like to think of it as avant-garde. But it's not very often on the show that I sit here and try to convince you, hey, why not write a serial killer? How would you like a serial killer as your new pen pal? Doesn't that sound great? Some people would think yes, because amazingly, so many of the women that come to penpals.buzz looking for male pen pal, they're looking for the more high-profile crimes. They're looking for people on death row. They think, well, they won't ever get out. You know, a lot of these relationships revolve around a fantasy, being with someone in your mind at least, but knowing the reality's not quite there. So I can have this fantasy that I'm in a romantic relationship with a serial killer, yet I have the safety of knowing that said serial killer won't be released and won't come to my house and won't strangle me with a belt the way Dwayne Lee Harris did to some of his victims. We're talking with him in a little bit today. Dwayne Lee Harris, I mean, not only is this guy a serial killer, and I don't know if you've noticed this, I certainly have. You always know when somebody's kind of more than just a robber, a burglar, someone that got busted for a few DWIs, because they always use the middle name, right? You got Lee Harvey Oswald. You got Dwayne Lee Harris. And this guy, not only is he a serial killer convicted of killing three women and someone who alluded that there might be 32 additional victims, which would bring his total to 35 murders, but three that he was convicted of. And he's got a nickname for each one of those victims. He's got three nicknames people call him. Usually you hear, you know, the Night Stalker, the Smiley Face Killer, right? You hear these single names for serial killers. This guy's got three of them. He's the Seattle Jungle Killer. He's Chilly Willy. That's my personal favorite. That one sticks with me. Chilly Willy. And the Seattle Shoelace Slasher is what he's best known as. Now, Dwayne Lee Harris, he killed these women in the late 90s. Near Seattle, and the jungle was kind of the area where there were the homeless and drug addicts and prostitutes and whatnot, and that's where these bodies were dumped. They asked him why he did it. He said it's his hobby, and he got a thrill out of it. And he looked at what he actually did. Why was he named the Seattle Shoelace Killer, for instance? And it's because he tied up his victims with their own shoelaces. Two of them he strangled with a belt, and then one he stabbed to death. All three of the victims he was convicted of killing were drug users that were living a lifestyle on the streets. Dwayne Lee Harris has been on Real Detective, a show in Canada. He's on American Detective, which is on Discovery Plus. And about 5 years ago, he was on another podcast, not as good as this one, but you might have heard of it, Unforbidden Truth. So then the question becomes, would you actually want to have a serial killer as a pen pal or as a friend? And you hear a lot of people say things like, well, someone shouldn't be judged for something in the past. The past is the past. What matters is who that person is today. But can that person be rehabilitated and reformed? Once you're a serial killer, are you always a serial killer? Or do you think someone could be, you know, go murder three women or maybe 35 women, and then a few years later, even 20 years later, 27 years later in his case, be reformed and be a good guy? That's what we want to know. I don't know the answer, but I've always said if I were going to have an incarcerated pen pal, I think it would be so much more interesting. I think I would learn so much more if I were writing somebody with a past with a criminal history like Duane Lee Harris, whether they're a serial killer, whether they're a murderer, whether they suffered an incredible amount of trauma in childhood, whatever their story. I think it would be more interesting and would provide me more educational value at the very least. Take a listen to Duane Harris after he was convicted.
People die every day. What am I supposed to say? I'm supposed to say, I feel sorry for somebody? No, I don't.
So that was at his sentencing hearing. He didn't feel sorry for what he'd done. A little bit later that day, he had this to say to the judge.
I'm still walking New York, and I still got radios, TVs. I'm still going to kick it. So let's go on with my sentence.
Hello, this is a free call from
Duane Lee Harris,
an incarcerated individual at Washington State Penitentiary. This call is not private. It will be recorded and may be monitored. Thank you for using Securus. You may start the conversation now.
Hello?
Hey, Mr. Harris.
Hello?
Hello.
How are you doing?
Hey, man. I'm good. How about yourself?
I'm doing fine. Everything is okay.
Hanging in there,
how
huh?
How are you doing?
Man, I just had a quick...
Yeah, that's it.
Had a quick dinner and rushed back here to the studio. We're excited to talk to you. I know you've been with us on penpals.buzz for a couple years, man. It's been, you were kind of right from the beginning. I mean, ideally, we want to get some more pen pals writing you, you know, and be able to have you share whatever you want to share as well on the podcast today.
Where do you want to begin?
Well, let's, for people who are not familiar with you, just want to give a little intro about who you are and how'd you end up where you're at now?
I resident in Seattle, Washington. I got 3 counts of first degree murder, but I've been working, doing self-help programs. I've been facilitating different programs for inmates that are incarcerated. I grew up in Boston, Massachusetts. I was born in St. Louis, Missouri. That's where my family originated from. And I came to Washington to visit my older brother. And that's how I came to Washington. I got married inside the state of Washington. I got married back in 84. I got a divorce in 91. Other than that, I just been doing self-help programs and things like that to better myself. So when I do re-enter society, I'll be right. Able to help others, the youth programs and stuff like that.
You got arrested, what was that, in the late 90s, right?
Yes, sir.
So you
I got arrested. Go ahead.
Oh, no, I was just, you've been there for a grip of time, man. You've been there.
30 years. It'd be 30 years flat.
Wow.
It'd be 30 years incarceration, you know. So I've been in a lot of other institutions in the state of Washington. Right now, I caught other cases by being incarcerated. So I got in trouble, got rolled up. Mm-hmm. I was in medium custody. They transferred me from medium custody back to close custody. That's where I'm at right now, close custody at Washington State Penitentiary. So I'm in Supermax. That's, we only come out 3 hours a day. So I only get 3 hours a day to come out. So things like that.
Man, so before that, I know when you first joined up with penpals.buzz, you were at Stafford Creek, I believe. And is that when you had the kind of medium custody and a lot more freedom?
Yes, sir. I got in a couple of fights because of my crime, and people won't let that guy out.
Yeah, how did the other inmates... I mean, you're there hanging out with all the guys, and some are probably in there just for whatever, robbery or whatever. Do they treat you different? Do you feel like you're a target when you're around the other inmates because of your, you know, being so famous, for lack of a better word?
You know, it's, I try not to look at that, you know, but people find us as animals. You know, they see the animal.
Yeah.
They don't see the change. They just see what your past.
Right.
So society is never going to let you live down your past. It's always going to be issues. Same way it was issues in media. Same way it's issues in close custody. Mm-hmm. Because people don't see the change. They only see what you have done. So sure, I got sisters, I got nieces, I got family. I did something that I should have never did.
Yeah.
But I can't change that. I can't change. I can't bring no people back to life. All that I could do today is better myself under God and hope that God can remove the issues that I go through each and every day inside this place. Because it's not easy. Don't get me wrong. It's not easy.
Mm-hmm.
Because someone is always looking at the media or the TV. And they say, oh, this guy, he killed his women, he did this, he did that. And it's always, you got to always, if you're not strong to deal with the issues, you will go crazy.
Yeah. I know. I know. Just for anybody listening who's, you know, maybe hasn't been arrested or convicted or anything, but to be judged still for something bad they did 30, you know, we're talking 30 years ago. And how much do people change in 30 years? I get, you know, the crimes look bad or whatever, but 30 years, you know, someone that was, say, 15 and now they're 50, are we still going to bash them every day for something they did when they're 15? That doesn't, just never seems right to me. And that's part of the reason, you know, I started this podcast and we started pinpals.buzz because we want to show how that change is possible and we want to show humanity and people and the goodness of people. And so tell us, like, one of the programs you said you're working with some of the guys now. What's one of the programs that you've worked on to help other people?
It's called Black Prison. It's Black Prison. It's Caucus. It's a group that we sit around. We tell our stories about our life, why we incarcerated, what brought us incarcerated, what was the goals and stuff that we've done since we've been incarcerated. And now that we help the youth, we have programs where we have youth programs.
Mm-hmm.
We have programs for other individuals, like people who may have rape cases, people that he is blind. So we sit in a roundabout room, about 60 to 70 of us. We have sponsors from the outside that come in. So we have a program where you sit back, somebody play the officer or the police, somebody play the judge or and stuff like that, and then you express why you came to prison. But one of the things I lied about for so many years that I said I never committed to crime.
Right.
I never committed to crime.
Mm-hmm.
And I made up different stories to have people to think that I'm this nice guy, but underneath, I wasn't. I tried to hide. I tried to do everything I could. So I stayed on mainline, general population. So now I facilitate with other inmates that who have heinous crimes or murder cases, rape, or other things that we sit back and we talk about it. Because this is a healing process. You have to heal. I'm not going to PC, protective custody.
Yeah,
I'm not going into that. I've always been a man, and no one's going to take my manhood from me. So I have to look at certain things when you're incarcerated for the heinous crimes that I'm incarcerated for.
Right.
So I have to expect that and to let others know I'm not this individual 30 years ago. And I'm not that type of person. What I do now, I write books. I got books that I wrote.
Okay.
I got my GED. Huh?
No, that's amazing. So you're writing books. You said you got your GED. I'm just saying that's impressive, man. That.
So I got my BA. I got my AA also.
Oh wow!
So now I'm going to journalism school. with a prison behind bars and stuff like that. So I'm doing a lot of work. And the work I'm doing, I just want to have something that I leave behind, that he's leaving behind the heinous crimes that I have committed. I also wanted to know that I'm not that individual. I just also want to understand, I got sisters, I got daughters. Mm-hmm. You know, if somebody did that to my daughter or something like that, sure, I'm going to be very pissed. Yeah. I'm going to be real pissed off about that. But I can't change. I was on drugs. I was using drugs. So I can't come back and say, I was a nice guy. I was a bad guy. Been into the games. I've been inside the games all my life. I've been a juvenile all my life. I've been a youth center all my life. I've been in foster home. I've been there. I've been through the ringer within the system itself. But no one sees that because they don't understand that, because they don't know who I am as a human being. They only see the person that commits the crime. That's it.
Yeah, it seems like people just like to, it makes people feel better when they can judge somebody else, right, for something they did, then they can feel better about themselves, which is a really screwed up way to be. But I'm thinking of the circle and the group you're talking about and how important that is, man. Just to be able to say, yeah, you know, I did this and I'm dealing with it and I'm moving on. And to be able to tell guys that have been in the situation, in similar situations, because I know when you tell staff, you tell the counselors, the staff, they're going to use that against you. They're going to try to, you know, write some bad notes on you and get you. Nobody really wants to listen. They just want to tell you why you're wrong all the time. At least that was my experience. So I think it's so important to have that group you mentioned where people can feel more open. And I'm sure there's like breakthroughs where guys that denied some of their crimes and they finally got to the point where they could admit it. And then only then is when you can really make progress on yourself.
You got a point there, because when I first failed, I couldn't get certain jobs. I couldn't get jobs in medical because they got females there. Mm. I couldn't get jobs tutoring other inmates in education programs. I couldn't get those jobs because I was being there with a female. So they didn't want me out into that there. So I had so many different programs that I was dealing with, that when you talk to the counselors, or if you talk to different people, you could get those programs. But now I can't. So now I'm able to get those programs. I'm back in medium custody. I should be going back sometime this year. I got 57 points for media, but I'm still in close custody until Olympia give me an override to go back to Stafford Creek, L.A. Heights, or Coyote Ridge. Sometime this year, I'll be going back.
That'll be a good day.
Yeah, you know, it's always a good day. You know, I look at, you know, trying to help others. You know, that's all. I'm not trying to make my crime look good or none of that. Mm-hmm. I try to be honest. I try to be straightforward. I try to tell people why I'm in prison. I don't want to lie to you and say, oh, I'm a nice guy. Yeah. Here I am, yeah. And I got on to the bus program because I felt that I could reach out to people, or people could reach to me, and we could dialogue. Let's dialogue. Let's talk about it. You know, I want somebody to say, hey, let's talk about it. You know, don't just judge me, mm-hmm. but give me a chance to tell you why I'm in this situation. What brought me to this situation? What gave me this situation? So I could blame my past. I could blame youth programs. I could blame the court system. I could blame anybody, but the person I got to look at in the mirror every day, that is myself. So I got to look in that mirror, and I got to say to myself, you did that. Ain't no one else did these crimes but you. So you lie, you can't raise it your own imagination. But in reality, you committed those crimes. So you can't go and lie about it when you're sitting here in this meeting and everybody gets the chance to read what you were in prison for. So you can't just go and say, oh, I didn't do this, I didn't do that, because they get to read what you were in prison for, and you get to read what they were in prison for. So, but it keeps it at the round table. It's not the meeting. We don't bring it out. We don't go and pop it down my phone. So we don't bring it out and say, get it to that. We just tell us the truth. That's what we have to do to heal. You've got to tell the truth. Because if you don't, you're just going to keep lying, and you're going to keep fabricating these stories, and people are just going to be like, I don't want to deal with this guy. He's going to lie all day to me.
Yeah, you know, one of the one of the biggest things we've seen with penpals.buzz and, you know, women in the free world, they're going on, they're looking for a pen pal who's in prison. And there are so many guys that even though the evidence is just stacked and stacked, and even though they pled guilty or whatever, you know, they're guilty, but they're just saying, I didn't do it. I didn't do it. And when the women see that, they just move on to the next guy because they're like, I don't want to write someone that's just going to deny everything and tell me stories and bullshit me, right? So I think it's powerful that a guy like you can just own up to it and tell the truth. And I hope we can get people writing you, because it would be, I think, an interesting friendship between you and other pen pals. Is there a certain type of person you'd like to write to you, or are you open to whoever?
I like, you know, for me, I like to write on education is one of the subjects I love. Communication is very important to me. And so to my pen pal, I want my pen pal to know I am an open door. So I have nothing to hide. I have nothing to give. But my thing that I look for inside a person is caring, religious, open-minded, someone that got a kind heart. It can help me process doing my books.
Okay.
You know, because right now I'm self-publishing. I'm self-publishing my book. And I'm writing a book about my childhood, my history, and stuff like that. And I don't mind sharing that stuff with them and being open-minded.
Oh, that's great.
That's what I'm looking for.
Do you have a title? Do you have a title for the book, Dwayne?
Yes, I got my book. It's called Cold Stone, and it's about me. It's about how I came up. I came up real quick. I came up. My mother was an alcoholic, and she used to drink. And I used to get beatings, childhood just beat. You know, that's how she raised me.
Yeah.
So when I got older, I didn't stay there because Boston took me as a child. When I was 10 and 9 years old, I got in foster care. And when I was in foster care, I got sexually abused by older women that was in foster care with me. And I got from one house to another house to another home. And then when I went back to my mother didn't want me there when I turned 16. She didn't know how to raise a man.
Yeah.
And my father, he was married to someone else at that time. So I didn't get to be with my father. My father passed away in 78 when I was 16 years old. So when my father passed, I was back with my mother in Boston. So it just, a person don't understand, it's the trauma. And the scars from the youth centers, they used to beat us. They used to beat us. They used to slam us against the wall. They used to do everything they could do to us. So I'm not blaming them for my crimes. Sure, I used to drug, from heroin to cocaine, from meth to, you know, from LSD, smoking sherm and stuff like that. If I was under the right mind, I would have never been in the situation I am in today.
I want to give out your info so people can write to you and learn more about you, and hopefully you can learn more about them as well. Dwayne Harris, your number 908-867. Now you can go to penpals.buzz, search for Dwayne Harris. You'll get his mailing address there. But much better way is on securistech.net or the Securis mobile app.
Yes. If they write me through Secure, it comes straight to me. They just got to send an email. They got to buy the stamps and stuff. Email me.
Yeah,
and I can email them back.
I think the stamps there in Washington, I mean, they're pretty cheap. They're like 15, 20 cents a stamp. So it's a lot.
Yeah.
Yeah. And you get 10 bucks, but you get like 50 stamps. So you can write quite a bit. Securistech.net and just go to the state of Washington. And I think it says like either Washington State Penitentiary or just DOC Washington. And then enter Dwayne Harris 908-867. And boom, man, start writing to this man because he's here. He's been down a long time, man. You're making positive changes. You're helping people. You're writing some books, which I hope we can read copies of at some point when they get out produced in the world.
Yeah, I'll be glad to do that. I'll be glad to send it to y'all guys. I share these stories with my volunteers. I share the story with inmates. I share the story with youth that come in to visit us because we got a youth program. And they come in, and they think that coming to prison is cool or being inside a gang. I've been in inside the gang over 40 years, being into the Crips and Blood gang, California, because I originated from California Crips and Seattle Crips. So I'm both parties, but I changed that. I got out of that. I no longer participate in that. And you got a lot of prison politics when it comes to that.
Yeah.
So, you know, you got to look at that also. So I hope someone hear me. They will be willing to listen, hear me out, and be able to correspond with me. I'll be glad. It don't matter their age. It don't matter things. I'm not trying to hustle you. I don't want no money. I don't want none of that. All I want is somebody that can listen, can hear, and understand. I don't need no money. I work every day incarcerated. I save my money up so that way I can get me an attorney and stuff like that that can get me back into the court system.
Yeah.
So I try to save that money and the money Donald Trump gave us before he left. The first time.
Man, I like that money, too. I was like, that was awesome. When I got that check, I was like, sweet, man. I went right to the bank, dude.
I like that check.
Yeah.
You know, he gave me that check.
I was a dumbass, though, Dwayne. Yeah. I think I went to the Indian casino and played some three-card poker. It was a very stupid way to use that money.
At least you did something with it. At least you did something with it, because that's what we got to do, man. We really got to, you know, I believe that today they pay youth about money. For them going through, I didn't get no check for the stuff I went through in juvenile. I didn't get no check. I didn't get no money. So I got a story to tell.
Yeah.
I got something to tell. I got something will bring life into the youth. I got a story that if a person give me the opportunity, just like you gave me the opportunity to speak on to your podcast, to be able to tell a story. They know a story that is coming from someone that's genuine, is real. And I tell them, everything I did, I let them know that you could change. It don't matter what society says. It don't matter what others say about you. It's what you say about yourself and how you build yourself and your character. Not what the past say, because people are going to hold that against you. It's like a Band-Aid. You put a Band-Aid over a sore, and hopefully the sore will go away. But sometimes that sore needs healing, time to heal. And you have to put on it and everything on it to get it to you. And that's what I do. I tell my story when I express myself in my book. My book is my outlet that I'm dealing with constantly. So that's my outlet. So that's the part I get to tell. I get to tell a story that no one never know about why the crimes took place, what took place, and how they took place. You know, I lied to the police. I'm the one who called them. They did not pick me up. I was the one who called them.
Mm-hmm.
And I told them I was tired. And it's out to report. They ain't never find me and pick me up. I was in a county jail for a robbery case. So when I called them, I told them about the murders. And I took them to the places where the murders took place at. So they never picked me up. They got me after I told them. And then now they making it sound like they arrested me. They found me. I confessed it. I confessed it to the murders because of my daughter.
Hmm.
She said, Dad, because I told her, she said, Dad, you need to turn yourself in.
Mm.
You have 1 minute left.
So it comes 1 minute.
Oh, no.
I enjoy the conversation, and I appreciate everything.
Man, I appreciate you calling in. And I know you're going to make a difference in a lot of lives out there, and I hope people listening to this can get to know you a little deeper. Dwayne Harris at Walla Walla, Washington, Washington State Penn. Thanks so much for calling in.
Okay, thank you. God bless.
It's lockdown time for Big Steve, but he'll be back soon with another edition of the PenPals.Buzz Prison Pen Pal Podcast. To be a guest on our show, email podcast@penpals.buzz or call 888-2-PENPAL. PenPals.Buzz is a division of SnapTura Inmate Services. We'll be right back.